NYC podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 107. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. We're continuing to upload our presentations from the Ontario Association of Child and Youth Care Conference, which took place in June of 2017. This is the last of our presentations from Educators Day, which we called Learning from the Educated. This week's episode is a presentation from Tanitia Monroe, who speaks to issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion with a particular focus on Black students in post-secondary schooling within Canada. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, hello. My name is Tanitia Monroe, and I'll be presenting on Black students' experience in Canadian and university college campuses. A little about me. Today's my birthday, so... I finally, I'm a big girl now, 40. I recently graduated from Ryerson. And, I'll be going off to OASE to do my master's there. Some more. I am an immigrant. I was born in the States but raised in Jamaica. I did my first degree there. I came to this country 10 years ago. I'll be talking about visibility, hypervisibility, and invisibility of Black and racialized students. So I need my audience to read this out loud with me. Is that okay?
Yeah. Diversity asks, who is in the room? Equity responds, who is trying to get in the room but can't? Whose presence in the room is under constant threat of erasure. Inclusion asks, is this environment safe for everyone to feel like they belong? Has everyone's ideas been heard? Justice responds, whose ideas won't be taken as seriously because they aren't in the majority?
Okay, thank you. So while navigating both campuses, I found that there were things that were lacking, not only in the content of the class, or the classroom discourse and discussions. So for me, you know, I went from class to class questioning the lack of critical awareness from my professors and pondered at time if course content was purposefully glossed over in order to not upset the status quo of the classroom environment, right? And as you can see, I won't go through everything, but that's a comment from another student, Brandy Whitford, and also Professor Annette Henry. And All right. I do believe that uncomfortable conversations can be the catalyst for knowledge creation and learning, but these conversations can take time and effort. They require risk, right? And as faculty and students are forced to manage these tensions that we sometimes have in the classroom, I believe that if this does not happen, there will be some form of disconnect with students. So what happens when there's a disconnect for Black and racialized students? When students are given content that is disconnected from their immediate world, we ultimately tell them that their lived experiences does not matter, right? When we make learning within the context of Blackness a radical endeavor for Black students, we reinforce an unspoken paradigm that somehow in their Blackness, they are radical. You inadvertently say that their bodies in their natural state does not matter. When there's an assumption that your reality is their reality and fail to make their learning culturally relevant, you are saying that their subjectivity does not matter. So I'd like to touch a little bit on visibility. So many students of color have to function in an alien environment in which we're often taught by culturally insensitive and sometimes uncaring instructors. And you heard it before. To further complicate matters, students' early anti-racist education has programmed them with a mantra that because we are all human, if differences does exist, it doesn't matter. And this is under the multicultural guise that is here in old Canada. And the new catchphrase is diversity. But anyways. As a result, many elements of identity are raised by this assimilative tactic: gender, sexual orientation, age, class, experience, even ultimately race itself. What diversity there is in the classroom is collapsed under the pressure of the dominant culture belief that one must ignore difference in order to combat racism. In addition, students whose diversity is more marginalized remain hidden due to the perceived and too often real intolerance towards that type of diversity. There is racial disparities in the classroom, right? It's a fact. And while it is expected that many new students will experience challenges during the transition to college or university, these difficulties are exacerbated as students of racially diverse background navigate predominantly white institutions. There are many situations that serve to silence students' voices and ideas. Black students are only called on to talk about issues of blackness in many situations. But when the students themselves bring it up, it's an issue that I faced, right? This is where hyper-invisibility comes into play. Hyper-invisibility is a type of scrutiny based on perceived difference, which is usually misinterpreted as deviance. So for me, I was often seen as that loudmouth black student in the class when I spoke up, right? When you become overly visible, you're often constantly under the gaze of others. You are being looked at, sure, but you are being watched and judged. So it's not the kind of visibility that people tend to seek if given a choice. Therefore, the perspectives of black students in post-secondary institutions are often ignored in a manner that denies them the full recognition and effectively renders them invisible. This silencing can be a result of classroom dynamics and pedagogy. This is deeply rooted in whiteness, which is played out in the curriculum, the hiring of staff, and the recruitment of students. By placing our education in the hands of unenlightened educators has always been dangerous and still is. Decolonizing higher education is a necessary step to achieve justice and equity. Can you hear me at the back? So how do we handle hyper-invisibility that blacks and other racialized students face? So one of the ways is validating their marginalized voices. So paying attention to power, rank, the mainstream, and the margins of each group, right? The goal is to acknowledge those margins and create opportunities for mainstream to hear from them and allow everyone in the room to be heard. For me, I believe that we have to be intentional in whose version of equity we are looking at when we talk about black and racialized students in spaces. And when black students resist being silenced by a white frame lens by speaking up, sometimes they get acutely aware of their hypervisibility. So if there was a topic that came up, which I do know how to speak on, I would get these stares, the microaggressions would come out, you know, or, oh, here we go again, here Tanita goes again, you know, stuff like that. So it's important you pay attention to this section, right?
Could you give an example of what you just said?
About the microaggressions?
Yeah, like here she goes again, like can you just give
Comments like that, or the rolling of the eyes, or the sighs, from peers, even professors, right?
In particular, when you're addressing the critical issue. Right?
Yes. So I'd get a lot of that, right?
And the message to you was, when you received that, what's the message?
You know, it was sometimes very subtle, the messages that I would get. And other times it's like, okay, we can't talk about that right now, or stuff like that.
So when would it happen? Like during times when you would speak up about something you're passionate about? Or?
Yes, I do believe, like as a black person, I've worked in this field for 20 years, right? So I was coming in as a mature student, like globally worked in the field. And I'm a parent too. So, you know, I do know that I'm coming with some knowledge.
Yeah.
And I found it hard for white professors to be talking about black youth,
mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm like, okay, you're laying the groundwork, but not in a proper way.
Right.
So let me kind of educate you how this should be, right? And aspects about like racism, oppression were often absent while they were talking. And I'm like, hey, so what about this? What about that? So then I'd get the, or the roll eyes or the shrugs, right? So that's, I hope that answers your question. So there are seven elements that occur as a result of racial slights. That deals with prejudice and racism that I've faced, right? So for students like myself, one feels a lack of recognition or acknowledgement. One feels there is no satisfaction or gratification from the encounter, and that's with like teachers or my peers. One feels self-doubt about his or her legitimacy, and you'll ask questions, because I've questioned myself like, did I do the right thing by speaking up sometimes, right? You walk away feeling that way. One feels no validation from the experience, asking my person of worth or seeking some form of corroboration of experiences from another person. One feels disrespected. One's sense of dignity is compromised and challenged, and one's basic identity is shaken, if not uprooted, right? So according to Franklin, invisibility is a psychological experience in which an individual may feel his or her personal identity and ability are undermined by prejudice and racism. And I felt that. I was at Ryerson for 2 years, and I felt invisible at times. And that would become frustrating in a class. Oftentimes I just walked out of the class, right? So in order to reverse this, we can identify practices that produce learning experiences in which black students feel recognition and validation, satisfaction and gratification, validation in the sense of who you are as a student being in this space, feelings of respect, dignity, and supportive identity development. That is key and important for professors to know that. You have to validate the black students and racialized students that are in this space. I heard you say that black students sit at the back. That is what white supremacy does in education, right? That is how blacks and racialized students feel, that we feel that we have to sit at the back. And this is not Rosa Parks anymore, right? We ain't sitting at the back, right? So for white professors, it's hey, come, you need to sit closer. Or even if they're staying at the back because they're comfortable, say, you know, acknowledge that they're there, acknowledge their presence, right? That's key and important. So I'd like to just say that ultimately professors and pedagogy have the potential to liberate or oppress, in the same way that people's lives can be altered by new knowledge of self and the development of feelings of agency in the world. Teaching that does not acknowledge students' realities and society's faults can permanently negatively influence the way that we see them, that they see themselves. Educators have the privilege of teaching. As campuses have mostly white educators, they have the privilege, the challenge, and the obligation to make learning meaningful and transformative for all students.
You can get into them, yeah.
I think it was on your first slide or second slide, it said, if differences exist, they shouldn't matter. Reading that correctly? Can you explain a little bit more about that? I mean, I really like that. That really stuck with me.
Yeah, so for me, okay, everyone here has differences. Why should you feel, because you have blonde hair, it should be something that you're stereotyped about or stigmatized or marginalized or being a woman, right? It shouldn't matter in a space. We should all feel included. And that's, I guess, along the lines that I was trying to go. It shouldn't really matter, like, I'm black, you're brown, you're white. But everyone needs to know that it's an okay space to be in, right?
To be different.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah. I just wanted to thank you for speaking. I loved what you said, and I could totally relate to, like, everything that you said. Like, as an Indigenous student in Northwestern Ontario, Indigenous populations are the minority. So as an Indigenous student in the classroom, I could completely relate to everything you had said. And just how important it is to talk about oppression for professors in the classroom to the students, because not only is it important in the classroom, but also as a practitioner graduating, going into the field,
yeah,
and working with oppressed youth. So, like, it's so important for professors to be practicing that in the classroom and getting the students to feel safe and comfortable so that they can go out in the field as practitioners and practice that, right?
Yes. I have an experience to share. I went to George Brown first, just coming in from Jamaica. I have, my first degree is in literature, and I have a minor in education. I taught at the age of 19, 15 year olds in Jamaica. I was asked, I wrote a paper. I was asked if I was sure I wrote a paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I regret this, and I'll always speak on this. I went home and I brought my degree back to the professor. I have a literature degree. I have a BA in literature. And I regret doing that. But this is what I had to do to prove myself. So yeah, I wrote that paper. I have a literature degree to say that I can write. But these are the questions that I would get, right? These are the barriers. That was the most crushing thing, and I regret it. I speak on it every time. Taking my degree and bringing it to this white professor to prove that I could write. And this is O Canada.
What courage. How would you do it differently now?
You really want to know?
Yeah.
My boss is in the room, Christine. I can't.
We can roll play off.
Are you sure you wrote that paper?
What was the question we didn't get?
What would I have done differently?
Oh, yeah.
It's another
training. Yeah.
I just want to point out, because I love what you've been saying, but I think what's also important for us as teachers to remember that it's not just words, it's not just speaking. We have to be aware of, and Wolfgang, you'll love this, but we've got to be creative in how they can express themselves, right? So we get students with spoken word, they sing, they produce video. It's not just someone speaking, because not everybody can speak white, black, green, orange. We've got to find ways to let people express themselves, right?
Yeah, I believe firmly it's professors need to think of seriously what is taught, how you teach it, right?
Yeah.
And how you convey justice and equity in the classroom.
Right.
You have to always keep your racial lens in check. Like, have to, once you walk through that door, you know, you're coming, you're encountering different students from different backgrounds, and you have to take that into account, right? So
I was also thinking, quite often critical reflection, critical pedagogy dies when we just talked about the oppressed and the oppression without talking about the transformation.
Yes.
So which is the praxis where it actually needs to be followed?
Yes.
So quite often we just, you know, we talk about that, we complain and die. But what do we have to do moving forward? How do we transform the existing oppressive system? How do we open our students' eyes to the structure that is creating this kind of problem and making them aware so that they could be also responsible for the action?
You know, as I said, I've been here 10 years and, you know, I work for the school board. Hey, Christine. So, and I find that when I'm even interacting with youth, there's the media. The media has a lot of influence on how students perceive their peers' racialized bodies, and then when when professors get them in the university and the colleges, and some of the things that they say, and I often say, you know, as professors, you know, you have to do this continuous learning, right? In order to move, not just like the feel of CYC, but just educate yourself and the students, and do it in an affirming way, right? It's not like bang, 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 stuff, but open their eyes in an affirming way that they can grow and want to learn more, right? So that's how I believe that you can do this practice, right? Just continuously educating yourself and there's and seeing what's going on in the world and trying to share that with your students, right?
I just, lots of things popped into my head as you were speaking, but one of them was, do you have any suggestions about navigating racial tensions among students? Because sometimes that becomes a challenge in the learning environment when you have really thick tension that's racialized among your students that really interferes with the learning experience, right, for everyone. There's been moments in my career over the years where it's been quite antagonistic and obvious, right? So, and it's very challenging to navigate without silencing, without just saying, okay, enough, everybody, stop it, it's over.
Yeah, for that, it's kind of difficult to to respond, but I respond to that, but I just believe that these difficult conversations, they have to be had. It's necessary, right? It's like, I get that maybe at the moment you just want it to be done and over with, but I believe like coming back to them and say, hey, something happened, like name it, label it, and just talk about it. Just use like half an hour, 45 minutes of your class or 30 minutes of your class to like speak on what happened. Is necessary, it's critical, or you'll fall into the trap that you're doing what everyone else is doing, which is sweeping it under the rug, and then no one will be able to figure it out, to say, hey, I felt that my voice was heard.
Yeah, I feel there are times where, you know, you kind of let things go, and then other people are being victimized in the moment as well when you let things go too far.
Even if, you know what, but I would say not addressing the entire class because it affected the entire class, right? But even if you have a conversation with them outside, but still address like, this happened, you know, the apple fell.
Yeah.
And when the apple fell, some people felt this way about the apple. The apple was dirty, you know, we couldn't eat it, just, you have to name it.
Okay.
And that's really important because some people walk away, oh, Natalie didn't do this. She was taken off for some kids and not the other. Yeah, you just have to name it.
And I'm still the white girl in the room, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's the
I remember.
Other
Thank you.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.